Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. During my talks on lotus blossom, I said that at some point I would talk a little bit about what happens after death and how it compares with the experiences that and the sequence of steps that were messed or experienced in 76. Now I'll start out just by reading what she says in the priest book on this subject. The place of how to grow a lotus blossom should be explained to a dying person with a view to the realization of the eternal prior to death. For nothing will ensure that a person will make the right decisions at the moment of death better than the certainty that the realization of the eternal can give. You know, of course, you can't just pop in on someone who's not a Buddhist and knows nothing about Buddhism and go at the time, the last days that they're alive, so, oh, here's a book, you know, look at this. Well, maybe you can, but most of the time you can't. In some cases, you could. The basic point here is that when it's appropriate, when it's good to do, you know, when it's good, meditatively comes up as good to do, you've sat on it a bit and it really keeps coming up as good to do, then showing people how to grow lotus blossom can be enormously helpful, and that is definitely true. How to Grow Lotus Blossom is the best depiction that I know of how to go straight on to the eternal and what and the attitude you have to have, the faith you have to have. And you can't do better than that. And it has to be if it is good. Some people, will, you know, might terrify out of their wits, and you don't want to do that right before they die. So, you know, this is not a formula. You know, remember, this is a book, I'm reading this from a book for the Remesa put together for the priesthood, so presumably you're dealing with someone who's been training for at least a while. In that case, you know, I certainly share with Remesa view that with Reverend Master, the view that they should be thoroughly acquainted, if they're training in our tradition, with how to grow lotus blossom well before they die. She says, she goes on to say, should there be time for this, it should be pointed out that the steps of the realization of the eternal prior to death are in reverse order to those of the meeting with the eternal after death, which every person experiences after clinical death if he has not realized the eternal prior to it. Then she goes on to talk about the exhortations. But this talk is not that I'm doing now is not about the exhortations as such, although I referred to them. It's about this point about the stages of the realization before death and the stages of the realization of the eternal after death being the reverse of each other. And I want to talk a little bit about some thoughts I have on, first of all, on basically on why this might be so. And secondly, just a little bit about in a, just a very general way, how that order of steps goes in both cases. First of all, there's a couple of kind of what I might call organizing ideas or concepts that help give a kind of overview of both the process that's described in How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, the process of Kensho, and what happens after death. The first of these organizing ideas is simply the idea of karma coming due. If you you look what happens at the beginning of How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, the River Master goes into retreat. She's really driven into retreat. You know, her energy has all run out. She's incredibly weak. She's ill. She doesn't really know what's happening to her. She thinks she might be dying. It may be that, you know, she certainly, it seems to have been the case that she was very close to death in the early days of that retreat. So a whole bunch of karma is coming due at that point. And, you know, what is the purpose of that? The karmic consequence is not a punishment. This is a mistake that other religions seem to make a lot, to think of karmic consequence as punishment. That's not what it is. So if it's not punishment, then what is it? Well, this is my second kind of organizing idea, opportunity. Opportunity. When that karma comes due, and it can show, like that happens in your lifetime, well, it's a big opportunity to clean up some karma. If the karma doesn't come due, you know, it can't get cleaned up. So what does the coming due of the karma mean? It means a number of things. One of them is that you get whacked by the pure feeling, pure states of feeling, which are the reaper of karma. What does that feeling tell you? Big need exists here. Okay? Feelings are signals of something. The extremity of the feeling that River Master describes at the beginning of How to Grow the Lotus Blossom, she says, remember, she said, I am in terror. That's not like mild fear. That's, you know, it's terror. You know, the body is a kind of a trap within which all these karmic jangles are held that can one day be released into consciousness. And the way it starts to be released into consciousness is through these pure states of feeling. So, you know, think of the karmic need in there as waving flags, shooting off flares. The waving of the flags and the shooting off flares is that pure state of feeling. And at times, excruciatingly painful. But that is going to be, meditating with that state of feeling is going to be drawing you back to the cause of suffering. That's going to be drawing you back to the cause of suffering. Meditating with that pure state of feeling drives you deeper into meditation. If you're not going to run from it and you're going to face it, you've got to go deep in meditation to handle it. And in going deep in meditation, everything within then opens up. Then the serious, deep work can be done within the heart. The fact that it is so painful, you know, the extremity of the pain will be matched later on by the extremity of the bliss. But the feeling itself in neither case is the point. No, feeling is not an end in itself. It's a signal. It's a signal. If you stub your toe and your toe hurts, it's a signal. Don't do this to your toe again. Especially not till it's healed. The suffering is letting you know there is a need. So, in the Kensho, the beginning of the Kensho, all that karma comes due in these states of suffering, spiritual suffering. There can be a good deal of physical suffering too. And that's all in the cause of the cleansing of the karma, an opportunity for the cleansing of the karma. This is going to lead, the cleansing of the karma is going to lead to the deeper experience of the eternal. The direct experience of the help and the love and the wisdom of the eternal. And a deepened certainty of the eternal. A certainty of our fundamental oneness or unity with the eternal. That is where it's headed. At the time of death, it goes in reverse of that. At the time of death, the opportunity for union with the eternal appears immediately upon death. And I'll just read you the way Ramaster describes it here. This is, I mean, truly beautiful. As lightning appears the luminescent splendor of the great Dharmakaya, encompassing you in its glory on all sides, swirling throughout your entire being. Your entire being. It is pure love, capital P, capital L, underlined. It is pure love. This happens, according to the teaching, you know, this happens to everyone at the time of their death, this opportunity. And you might say that, well, at the time of death, there's the opportunity to just cut to the chase and just dissolve into the love of the eternal. In actual fact, you know, a lot of beings don't do that. And why don't they do that? The next exhortation goes on to point out why beings don't do it. And that is really basically the judgment of oneself. One's fear and the clinging to self. One's fear of dissolving into that love. It can look to self like obliteration. But the fundamental thing is the judgment of oneself. As she puts it, you're remembering one's past deeds and judging oneself, rather than just trusting that love with all your being and just dissolving into it. So suppose a person at the time of death misses that opportunity. Then within a short time, according to the teaching, you know, within about 3 days, then they're manifest what are called in Buddhism, you know, the benevolent and peaceful deities, or Buddhas. And that goes on supposedly for about a week. I would imagine that it probably varies. But I have no proof of this. Well, this is like the latter part of lotus blossom, if you think about it. In the latter part of lotus blossom, River Master is, you know, going to the Buddha land and walking among the, you know, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and all the beings there. So, kind of pure land or heavenly experiences. If we we think of karma in terms of both the karma that leads to suffering, the actions, you know, the word karma means action, so the actions that lead to suffering, and we think of also the karma as the meritorious karma, that, you know, right action that leads to the cessation of suffering, or can do. What it looks to me like is that if you, so to speak, miss the boat on the first, at the first opportunity, then the merit, your merit then manifests, so that you get more opportunities. This is after death, so you get more opportunities. You know, a protracted opportunity, you kind of get the reassurance. You could really let go. You know, it's like the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have come to you to say you can really let go now and just dissolve into love of the eternal. You don't got to keep going down the road towards rebirth. So if you think of it as, if you're frightened by the initial magnificence of the eternal, then you get a more kind of toned down but still totally benevolent and kind manifestation of the eternal. Reassuring, more reassuring manifestation of the eternal. And again, you're given the opportunity, you know, let go completely, dissolve into it. You don't have to judge yourself and keep going. But if you hang on, by the way, the kind of entity, you know, there's no word that we have for whatever this is, but the according to the teaching, you know, that what this is happening to is this kind of unembodied, non-physical kind of essence of the remaining karma, called the spirit body. Ramesh refers to it as the mind-body in this, but that's too much like the body-mind thing, but it's referred to elsewhere as the spirit body. And the way she explains it is it's just made up of the remaining, you know, uncleansed karma, and I guess also, you know, just this core of merit as well. It's fundamentally unreal, just as this body and mind are fundamentally unreal. And yet it also has reality, just as this body and mind has reality. But it is transitory. It's not a soul that is reborn or reincarnated. It's transitory. It's a kind of vehicle, I guess, for the opportunity to manifest to and within. So you're kind of, you've died, you kind of missed the big opportunity, you've maybe missed now the kind of week long opportunity. So now things are starting to get grim. You're kind of tootling along, but things all of a sudden start to turn dark. And then you get the what you might say the kyosak opportunity, which is if you won't get the message through kindness and benevolence, maybe you get the message through a kick in the butt. So that's it, this becomes at this point it becomes like the earlier stages of Lotus Blossom, where the bodhisattvas who manifest as demons come and kind of try to shake the truth out of you, so to speak, help you get straightened out. It's said in Buddhism, or at least it's in Soto Zen anyway, the kindest kanzion appears in hell. And it really is true that when one is going through, you know, really deep suffering, if one's really meditating, really looking up, one recognizes, it doesn't turn it into a picnic, but one recognizes the kindness in what is happening and the teaching in it. And you see in How to Grow Lotus Blossom, you see River Master squarely facing the teaching. And this is of these very difficult and painful experiences he's going through. And what comes out of that but this magnificent understanding expressed in her commentary and the precepts. Boy, that commentary of the precepts, she paid with her blood for that, spiritually speaking. And it's why it is absolutely the most exquisite and profound teaching on how to live our life. She got an awful big lesson in what not to do and why you don't do it, lasting for weeks and weeks. And that commentary of the precept, and what you have to hold fast to in life as well. How to turn towards the eternal and how to offer everything, how to wait and listen, how to follow. It was an incredible education in the early months of her retreat. You know, going on 24 hours a day. And that's the same thing that's happening to someone after death. You're getting an opportunity and you're getting an education. Will you take the opportunity? Will you learn the lesson? Well, you know, just listen to how River Master describes in one of the exhortations what's happening when one goes through this. She says, because you have not yet entered into the great Dharmakaya through familiar loving emanations, it now shows you the confusions of your own mind, so that you may, driven by your own fear, to abandon your false views of self and merge with the true self, capital T, capital S. So then she describes, you know, the kind of hellish, frightening things that happen a bit, and then she says, these things appear because you caused them to. It is you who so far have preferred dream forms to true reality. All of this you have created for yourself and brought upon yourself because your mind does not yet know that there is no separate self. These deities and demons are the result of your own confusion of mind. All are unreal. Remain still in meditation. Do not try to run away from or towards them. Feel no fear. Do not fear these creatures. Do not flee. Well, where did she learn that? She learned it. This was written, she wrote these things after Lotus Blossom. And she learned it in the School of Hard Knocks there. You know, she learned to just meditate in the midst of these frightening manifestations of karmic consequence, and to keep looking up. And what she's saying here is that even after death, you're given opportunity after opportunity to get it right. You're first given the opportunity in the blaze of love. You're then given the opportunity in a week at least of, as she puts it, emanations of the love and compassion of the eternal that hopefully will be less frightening than the initial blaze of love. And then you're given the opportunities in the form of Now, what are they called? Fierce deities and demons, which are all just a creation of our own karma. This is why it's so important to learn to meditate truly while we are alive and to practice it truly. Because even if we don't get it all cleaned up in this lifetime, we're going to be given a great retreat after death. It's everyone's forced to go to the Zendo after death and sit. And you get your opportunity there. Will you look up or will you look down? Will you get swept away by fear? Or will you face these things and say, I trust the Eternal, you are not real. I'm sitting still, you sit still. I'm holding fast to the Eternal here. You see, that the first kind of, I've suggested two kind of overview or organizing ideas. One of them is the idea of karmic consequence coming due. And the other one is the idea of opportunity, really. But they're really the same thing viewed from, in two aspects. So karmic consequence coming due, however it is experienced, it is always an opportunity. And there is always compassion in it. How we will use the opportunity is up to us. Remember in the Sagaki offertory, we offer merit for the evil and wicked in heaven. One might experience the benevolent Buddhas and Bodhisattvas manifesting and think, oh man, I've made it now. Look, I've made it. Sainthood. How wonderful I am. And sit there and just kind of enjoy yourself for a week. And then all of a sudden the bottom drops out. You drew the wrong conclusion. What a swell person am I? And then all of a sudden the bottom drops out and it's no longer the benign and kindly ones. Now it's the ferocious ones. But it's all the same compassion. If, as Obaku said, if one can, view the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas with equanimity and not grasp after them, and if one can view the demons and devils with equanimity and not run from them or be terrified by them, then you can dissolve into oneness with the Eternal. Do you remember that section where he says that? It's one of the most magnificent things I think ever written. And if I can find it very quickly, I will read it to you. Yeah, I did. Men are afraid to forget their own minds, fearing to fall through the void with nothing to which they can cling. They do not know that the void is not really void, but the real realm of the Dharma. If a man, when he is about to die, can only regard the five aggregates of his consciousness, regard body and mind, as void, if he can only awake to this in a flash and remain free from the remaining entanglements of the triple world, he will indeed be one who leaves the world without the faintest tendency towards rebirth. If he should behold the lovely sight of all the Buddhas coming to welcome him and yet feel no desire to go towards them, if he should behold the devils and evil forms surrounding him and yet have no fear, remaining oblivious to self and at one with the Absolute, he will indeed achieve the formless state. And it can't be put better than that. And that's just what Rim Master is saying. You remember, and now this also shows you how important some of the lessons were that Rim Master learned in the Buddha land in how and express in how to grow a lotus blossom. Do you remember that one time she hung out a little too long in the Buddha land, and later she reproached herself and said, "Ah, I should have got out of there when it was time and not just stayed and enjoyed myself." Do you remember that? This is why. You can miss the opportunity in the state of bliss or in the state of terror. You can miss the opportunity. This isn't about saintly selves or evil selves. There is no self. It's about the fact that there is no self. There is only the true self, the eternal. And what we call death is an opportunity to dissolve into the eternal. It is also an opportunity to continue the rebirth process, to continue on in the process of birth and death. You know, it's up to us. If we judge ourselves and believe ourselves to be unworthy of the love of the eternal, then things have to continue until someone gets it. If someone can get it in their lifetime by having a kensho, as Rim Master says, that's the best preparation for death that you can have, is to have kensho. And the further you go in training, the better the preparation. Does that guarantee that you will have no fear at the time of death? No, nothing guarantees anything. No, there is no guarantee. Because there is no guarantee, one wants to remember to ask for help, to truly meditate, and to remember, and to truly look up. This also helps you see, if you kind of know how to read it, it helps you see why just becoming a better person is not the point of Buddhist training. If one becomes a better person, as the world understands that, it is a side effect of Buddhist training, but is not the purpose of it. You can be a better person and still have an equally strong sense of self as you had just breaking the precepts. You can do good deeds and be proud of the fact. And that is also a breakage of the precepts. Just making good karma is not the purpose of Buddhist training. The purpose of Buddhist training is liberation, true spiritual liberation with a capital L. The complete return to the unborn, not my will but thine. And this is true of all mystical practice. Of any religion. By the way, I would only include as mystical practice a tradition that has a genuine groundedness in perceptual truth and perceptual understanding. Otherwise, mysticism just degenerates very quickly into magic of some kind or other. And it isn't that the kind of common way in which mysticism is thought of in the world nowadays, mostly is kind of involvement of magic, something like that. But that's what happens in mysticism when the attempt in the search for spiritual liberation becomes divorced from perceptual truth and perceptual understanding. Then it turns into something very degraded. if after a period of some weeks, perhaps, of the fierce deities and demons, one hasn't got the point and one is still clinging to worldly existence, then the rebirth process is pretty near inevitable. I don't know that you can ever say it is completely inevitable, but then one is kind of swept along on the winds of karma towards rebirth. Traditionally, it's said that there's a period of about 49 days. I have reason to think that that's very, very precise, that it is actually for a period of 49 days for a human rebirth. And what is rebirth? It's another expression of karmic consequence, and it's another opportunity. I have not spoken here of bodhisattvic rebirth. I alluded to it a good deal in my talks on how to grow lotus blossom. In whatever realm we are reborn, or let's say, take this the somewhat confusing reference to self there out of it. In whatever realm rebirth occurs, the Buddha is there. The eternal is there. The love of the eternal is there. That realm itself is an expression of the love of the eternal. Some realms are very rigorous, tough realms. Some realms are much easier, less suffering. But whatever realm the karma ends up in, there is a continual opportunity for conversion to happen. Sometimes there's a need that's just so great, and there's a confusion that's so great that one has to go through this school of hard knocks for quite a while. But all realms of rebirth are transitory. There's no permanent realm of rebirth. They're all transitory. Some last much longer than others. They're all transitory. And in that sense, fundamentally unreal. And within all realms of rebirth, there is always the opportunity to find the eternal. There was a wonderful, it was a tanka actually, a Tibetan kind of meditational painting that showed a gaki, a hungry ghost, kind of getting enlightenment. And all around this hungry ghost were other hungry ghosts who were like grabbing after things, But this one was sitting in the midst of these flames, and it was getting it. And it's such a joyful and hopeful picture. Even in the realm of the hungry ghost, enlightenment is possible. Even in the realm of the hungry ghost, even in the hells, there is the eternal. Always there is a law of karma. Always there is opportunity. One goes through the kind of process that River Master describes in How to Grow a Lotus Blossom so that the continuing hard knocks education doesn't have to keep happening. If all the karmic need gets met, truly met, then there is no need for rebirth. And the dewdrop slips into the shining sea at the time of death. This is the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha.